Welcome to Lynn Cullen Live, talk radio without the static. Email your questions and comments to lynncullenshow@gmail.com. And now your host, Lynn Cullen.
There are any great shakes when it comes to infrastructure, but when it comes to government mixing in Cullen, where are you going to say? When it comes to government doing what government can do, which is to pass regulations and laws so that, for instance, homes aren't built that will fall down on people, so that there's rules to follow. And it was pointed out that in this country that just so many people love to hate the government, the people who hate government so much never ever acknowledge how government aids them, helps them, saves them, protects them. Never acknowledge that. They only see how government gets in their way and annoys them, takes their money. You know, it really is just a mindset. Oh, wait a minute. There's a connection problem with YouTube and the stream isn't loading for people. Kevin and I are going to research. Okay, we're back on. People probably didn't hear the first couple of minutes. All right. Well, I don't remember what I said. I'm hearing from, okay. I guess we're up. Fine. You didn't miss anything. Really. Off to a stumbling start, and it's just as well. The gods were good. So here it is. This is February 6th. Just saying. I've done nothing. I've talked about weather. I've talked about exploding trees and earthquakes and ice quakes or whatever those things were. Stuff. But I'm back. So last night I did what I do when the Grammys are on. I tried to stay up. But I'm an old lady, and old ladies go to bed. But I did watch maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours of it. And I hate award shows. I just hate them. But I always find that the Grammys are a way for me to at least hear some of the music that I don't listen to. I mean, I don't listen to contemporary music. I don't. And, you know, often it sounds strange to me, or I don't find it particularly a lot of fun. But quite clearly, a whole lot of other folks do. So I've learned not to disparage it, but to try to take it in. And I've often, you know, been really surprised at finding out that music that if I didn't think about it much, I would say, oh God, I can't stand it. That if you listen with an open mind, an open heart, you can sort of understand it. And you can also remember how music impacted you when you were young, because some of the music is just, I'm too old for it. I'm too old. It's not hitting me the way it hits a young person with raging hormones. But I remember enough about raging hormones to have an appreciation for it. Not all of it, but some of it. Like when the Grammy started, I didn't know who that was. I didn't know who those Spanish, what that music was. And then when I found out that's Bad Bunny, I've heard of Bad Bunny, but somehow that's not what I expected Bad Bunny to be. And did I see what I thought I saw when somebody help me on this. When Bad Bunny started the Grammys, he came down the aisle of the audience along with an entourage of dancing women and people wearing large, like, paper mache heads that I did not recognize. It seemed like they were supposed to be people, and the only person I thought I recognized in the these characters was Roberto Clemente. Did I see Roberto Clemente in a huge, like, head in Bad Bunny's opening song? I'm just asking. It was definitely the whatever that head was, it was wearing what sure as hell looked like a Pittsburgh Pirate hat. And since Bad Bunny is, he's Puerto Rican, right? I just thought maybe that, whatever. Somebody help me here. I've seen nothing about it. Was that Roberto Clemente representing at the Grammy Awards? Just ask. I only have a few other things to say about the Grammys. Because, as I said, I didn't last long. Par for the course. The most beautiful dress, because usually what people are wearing is so god-awful. And yesterday was no different. The most glorious dress was worn by a presenter, and that is Viola Davis. I have to say, whoa! I've never seen such a beautiful dress. Just got to say, gorgeous dress. And it turns out that Viola Davis won a Grammy earlier in the day for, I guess, narration of her own book, which I did listen to on one of my drives west. And, man, what a life. What a childhood she had. Whoa. Oh, my God. And to look at her. Whoa. So winning a Grammy, she's now got that it's better than a hat trick because it's four. An EGOT. Is that what it's called? An EGOT. She's won an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony. Whoa. Unbelievable. And the best-looking dress I've ever seen. Okay, two other things that I thought when I was watching is three other things. Smokey Robinson has had so much cosmetic surgery that he doesn't even look like a human being anymore. He just looks bizarre. When he was on, I thought, geez, wow, he's scary looking. I mean, I think, because he just doesn't look natural. It doesn't look like a human being supposed to look. I thought, how old is he? And I Googled him, and it said he was 80, maybe. I mean, he doesn't look 80, but he doesn't look whatever he thinks he looks like either. He looks unreal. And Berry Gordy, who I also looked up, is 93, and he doesn't look it either, but he doesn't look like he's had a ton of work done. God, people get so nuts about that because they don't want to look old. And then you end up looking bizarre and old. An old person who looks bizarre because they're trying not to look old. Very odd. Very odd. What else? Is Lizzo losing weight? I'm just asking. I mean, she's done so much for, acceptance of larger women and people. And I swear she's nowhere near as big as she used to be. And I was thinking, if you're Lizzo, would losing weight be a bad move? Because your whole thing was about, well, I mean, I'm just saying, I don't know. I haven't had time to think about it, but I think she's clearly nowhere near as big as she used to be. She's still plenty big, but yeah, just asking. And then the other thing that was really funny in the little bit of the Grammys I saw was Ben Affleck, who, yes, does not sing as far as I know, but he's, you know, married to Jennifer Lopez, and they were there, and for some reason they kept cutting away to him for reaction shots during it, and every reaction shot was funnier than the next because Ben Affleck clearly didn't want to be there. Now, I don't understand the directors, the guys calling the shots of what shot the viewer will see. You know, take camera four, take camera two. He's looking at all these possibilities. Why he would have kept saying, take Affleck, because Affleck was looking like, dear God, what the fuck? Get me out of here. I mean, just really unhappy. And if you're directing the show, you don't want to show people there reacting like that because it's a downer, right? So I would, or you do it because, in fact, it was funny. And a lot of, I'm sure people, I wasn't the only one, laughing every time they showed him. Anyway, that's all I have to say. That was my entire reaction, as far as I can remember, to the Grammys. It was Roberto. Yes. I almost tweeted something just as it started. Is that Roberto Clemente at the Grammys? And then I thought, do not do that. Do not do that, because if it isn't, you will look like the fool you are. The, you know, old lady watching the Grammys who doesn't know anything. So I didn't. Damn it. Jonathan writes, it was Roberto. It says here that Bad Bunny was accompanied by a total of 8 dancers, 8 giant characters. And the characters were an homage to Puerto Rican legends. Okay, well, that's why I didn't recognize any of them, because I don't know these other people. Tego Calderon? I should know him. Roberto Clemente. Julia de Burgos. I don't know that. So, anyway, it was Roberto! Unbelievable. Thank you, Jonathan. It was bugging me. And thank you, Milton. It was poet Julia de Burgos, reggae pioneer Tego Calderon, baseball legend Roberto Clemente, and then the others, I don't know them. They're composers and songwriters. So all of them were sort of in the arts, except for Clemente. But yeah, there was Roberto Clemente dancing down the aisle of the Grammys last night, and I recognized him. Yes. The reason I didn't, wasn't sure, is because I've noticed that, like, a lot of, it seems, rappers, or I've seen it a lot, if they're wearing a baseball cap, it's not unusual to see that pirate, that black pirate hat with the, you know, with the yellow P on it. It seems like that's a popular hat. So I thought, you know, it could be somebody else. I have no idea. Anyway, that's enough. Enough about nothing. Oh, I don't know. You know, we live in a world so insane. I, for one, do not want to watch the State of the Union address tomorrow night. Because after all, how much is one person supposed to take? That performative, you know, ritual. I can see it in my mind's eye right now. The president being introduced by that guy that comes down the aisle, all those people who want to be on TV trying to get near him. They go by, they show the Supreme Court justices miserably sitting there, the SOBs. And then on top of it, it's not going to be Nancy Pelosi for the first time in a long time up on the whatever that thing is. I want to. The only word that's coming to my mind is the Hebrew word for alt bima on the that platform. It'll be, God help us, Kevin McCarthy and Kamala Harris. I don't want to watch. I don't want to watch the performance of, oh, the Democrats go cheering and stand up. Yeah, the Republicans sit there. All of a sudden, the Republicans are standing up. Yeah, no, that won't happen. And then, I mean, just on and on and on. And then the sob stories, you recognize somebody up there. As a matter of fact, I think I know Tyree Nichols' parents have been invited, right? Who started that? Was that Reagan? That, you know, singling out some, it might have been because he had a flair for, or his, the people around him for, you know, showmanship, for putting on a show, of having somebody as the guest of the first lady. And then they stand up and the place goes wild. But it's not like Tyree Nichols' parents is going to make the place go wild. It'll make the Republicans uncomfortable. Maybe that's why they're there. I don't understand. I don't like any of it. I've got two little things that I saw that made me smile, and they're about David Crosby, who I don't know that I mentioned his obit, because what am I going to say? His music is part of my... I had raging hormones when David Crosby was doing his thing. And so his music is just, you know, in me. And I'm very appreciative, truly. So some people wrote in encounters with David Crosby. And I just thought that... two of them showed, even though he was supposed to be a son of a bitch to his musician colleagues, he was apparently not a son of a bitch to just regular folks. And these two stories that someone wrote in are stories about encounters with David Crosby. I will share both. They're short. Robert writes, many years ago, actually a bit over half a century, I was a young kid hitchhiking in Hollywood, and David Crosby stopped for me in his Mercedes. As soon as I got in, he, without asking, handed me a fat joint. It was not so much of an offer as it was a matter of course, like an airplane meal. And here's your joint. I picked you up, and here's your joint. His demeanor was exactly what I would have expected. Kind, generous, and humorous. A twinkle in his eye. Okay, that's that guy's wonderful encounter with David Crosby. And here's another, also California. We were having dinner next to David Crosby one night. My daughter, who was 8 at the time, desperately wanted to meet him. She waited until he finished and went over to tell him how much we all loved his music. He pulled out a chair for her, and they talked for 10 minutes. So an 8-year-old girl at a restaurant coming up to him. I mean, you know, it's not, well, those are two nice encounters. And you never know. I mean, you know, I think a lot of, I would be very reluctant to come up to anyone to do that. I would, because, you know, they're just going about their lives and whatever. But I don't, I mean, when people like recognize me, especially back in the day, I rarely didn't enjoy the encounter. Not always. My favorite is, I'm standing behind a woman in a Giant Eagle checkout line. And she happened to turn around and she sees me and she does like a whoa. And she says, "Oh, I know you." And I smiled. And she said, "You're, and she was struggling. Boy, do I know that feeling now, because I could never come up with names. And I started trying to help her. You know, I started to say, I'm, and she, don't tell me. You're, and this, I'm telling you, seemed to be going on for a very long time. And so finally, despite her protestations, I said, Lynn Cullen. And she said, no, that's not it. Oh, God. All right. Bob writes, at least tomorrow's State of the Union address that'll be given by President Biden won't be like the State of the Union address given by his. I'm not going to say that adjective because Ella doesn't want me taking the right, by his predecessor, Trump, back in the early 2020 BC, before COVID. That State of the Union was highlighted by Trump giving the Presidential Medal of Freedom to Rush Limbaugh. Oh, you're right. I gotta remember. Oh, my God. That's right. Rush Limbaugh was the guy who was seated with Melania up in the peanut gallery. Right. And he gave Rush. That's right, Bob. That's right. At least it's not that. Now, the only reason I think I'd watch is in case something happens. But then if something happens, they'll show me later. So why the hell do I have to watch? I don't. I think I just made up my mind. All right, here's something else I have, and it's just nothing. It's just that Metropolitan Diary thing, but I just so love this little piece. And it made me think, because I had read, a very thoughtful piece written by, what's his name, Derek Garrett. He's like the new editorial page editor at the PG. I'm not supposed to be reading that. And I can't believe he'd be happy about this strike, because he strikes me as a good guy. Anyway, he was talking about the perception of crime and this thing about now the downtown being a shooting gallery. And I keep hearing people talking about, there was a shooting there and I was right there 3 days ago. And I'm thinking, oh, come on. I mean, it doesn't take much to scare people. But he was pointing out how much he loves downtown Pittsburgh and walking around in it. And he then said that he has a concealed carry permit. And he's known to, be carrying. But he says he doesn't in Pittsburgh because he feels so safe. And then he suggested that a lot of people find the downtown frightening because it brings them into contact. And not even, immediate contact. It brings them into proximity to people they otherwise would never be in proximity to. And I think he's totally right. There it is. If you go downtown, you're going to see homeless people. Yeah, panhandlers. You don't have to go downtown. I mean, you can go anywhere practically these days. But you're going to see black people. You're going to maybe see people who are outrageous looking. You're going to not be in your all-white comfort zone. And so I think a lot of people, and then, it's true. This is why integration is such an important thing, and it's why cities are such important things, because they mix people. You're forced to be with people you otherwise would not be. And you know what that is? I don't think of that as frightening. I think of that as wonderful. I think of it as enriching. I think of it as, even if you want to be like a tourist and say, hey, look at that. It's interesting. I remember my dad coming to Pittsburgh to when I first come here. And I knew he'd get a big kick out of Murray Avenue, with its kosher groceries and clearly bakeries, so much Jewish presence. So I said, because, he grew up and lived his whole life in a town that had almost no Jews. So he always gets a kick out of seeing Jews in any kind of, numbers. And so I took him down to Murray Avenue. We were walking, and he literally, at one point, stopped in his tracks and pointed and said, oh my, look at that. Actually, he said a Yiddish thing. He didn't say meaning. He said, give a kook. I'm not sure that's what he said. Give a kook. Which I took to mean, look at that. And I followed his finger. And he was pointing at an Orthodox Jew with, the whole getup and the curls and the hat and a bunch of little kids that trailing him like ducklings. And I thought it was, I said, Dad, don't point. It was like he was at he's a Jew. He's a Jew saying, my God, look at that. Now, he was taking pleasure in that sighting. But to him, it was exotic and strange as well. Because no Jews in Green Bay looked like that, dressed like that. None. So I'm just saying, it's a good thing to be in a place where you are with people you would otherwise not be with. You know what you find out? They're fellow human beings. If you dare to actually engage in conversation, let's say. Just saying. And so people who like are so, whose reaction to anything that is not their usual environment is fear, I have to say, I feel for them. I do. Because they're missing out on so much in life. So much. They're also causing trouble, if you ask me. So anyway, this Metropolitan Diary thing made me think of the joys of living in a place where there's people unlike yourself. And so here's this little teeny thing sent to the Metropolitan Diary in the New York Times, which is, as I keep telling you, is a thing where you just talk about something that happened to you in New York. And this one is this. It was 1995, and I was about to leave the city to move to Paris and get married. I loved Paris, but I knew I would miss New York terribly. I decided to have one last coffee at a cafe in the East Village. As I did, a very large man who was wearing a poodle skirt and pink kitten heels and holding a small blue suitcase walked by. "I'm leaving this town," he said petulantly. "Me too," I thought sadly. "Me too." That one made me smile. So I'm all over the place here, aren't I? I've talked about absolutely nothing. And I'm sorry. I am so, so sorry. And I'm going to continue to talk about absolutely nothing. No, I'm not. You know what I'm going to talk about? I'm going to talk about something that's scaring me. And that is the election coming up in May. The primary election here in May, guys. And because, you know, Democrats hold such a advantage, as they say, the primary is where the action is. And we'll be voting on district attorney and, for the first time in a long time, voting for county executive. Now, these are for Democrats and Republicans. As far as I know, I don't know. I'm just going to talk about the Democratic side because the odds are, even with the county, even though these are county elections, the Democrats have an advantage, right? Even with suburban Republicans around. But I have to tell you, Zapala, the DA. Now, I know him socially. We even have we've had some friends in common. And he is, you know, at a party. He's a delightful person. I've had a nice conversation with him here and there. Nothing major. Just hello, how you doing? As district attorney, I think he's a disaster. And enough. And you know what? The odds are he's going to win again because that's the only person people around here seem to think can do this job. And I'm here to say he's not doing it very well. Zapala. And anytime somebody tries to come up against a man, they come up against the powers that be and that name recognition. But I just want you to know that there is a challenger, a worthy challenger to him. And I hope to hell that you guys not only vote for Matt Dugan, but you tell others, here's the guy. He is a much more progressive person in regard to criminal justice. He is right now the chief public defender, and he wants to switch sides and be the chief prosecutor. He just believes in stopping this sort of knee-jerk penalizing of petty crime. He's looking toward, and he's nowhere near as, like, I think, progressive as, let's say, Krasner in Philly, who's done a fine job. But he just doesn't see that charging people with nonviolent offenses and low-level offenses, which he says is the majority of stuff that this Zapala brings constantly, all it does is fill up the jail, and we know that jail is a disaster. It fills up the jail with a lot of young people who would be better off if we had other means of dealing with first-time offenders, petty crime activities. There are programs that can be instituted. And if you had a DA who believed in that, my God, you could literally save lives and you could literally impact crime. But Zapala's old school. And all old school does is fill up our jails and destroy lives. As Dugan says, our criminal legal system was not designed to address substance abuse, drug disorders, or mental illness. And yet those are the main reasons why people end up in the criminal justice system and the jail. And to have a DA, a prosecutor, who understands that one simple fact would be such a blessing. So this Dugan guy says you want to divert these low-level cases out of the system and into programs. And Dugan says this blew me away. If we stop doing what we have been doing under Zapala, we would save a ton of money for the taxpayers. You know why? Because here, this is fact. 42 cents of every dollar of the taxes you pay to the county, almost half of the taxes you pay to the county, goes to support the current criminal justice system, as opposed to a social service system that would help people instead of punish people. So, just saying. And this Dugan lives in the burbs. He's not a city resident. Guys, stop voting for Zappala, okay? And here's the other thing. Rich Fitzgerald can't run anymore. He's term limited. So for the first time in a long time, we have an opportunity, and that is a hugely powerful position, county executive. And everyone and his uncle's running. John Weinsteinerstein, not sure. And you know the name, because if you've ever paid property taxes around here, you know, and this has always bugged the hell out of me, that you don't write the tax on your check. If you're writing a check, you don't write Allegheny County down. You write John Weinstein down. And when I first got here and was paying property taxes and saw I make the check out directly to the county treasurer in his name, that struck me as so bizarre. Because I'm not paying him. I'm paying the county. And then I thought, that's not how it is in a million other bailiwicks, I don't think. I never bumped into it before. So I think that it's simply a way to get his name in your head. You got a red check, so we all know him. Anyway, he wants to be county exec, and I see that he's already all the powers that be, all the old white guy powerful pals and their corporate partners all are giving that guy money. And he's got a huge, huge war chest ahead of the others. Now, the others are, there's a lot of them, but another one is Michael Lamb, who has been the, auditor? Who's always struck me as a good guy. And he seems to have done a fine job. And I got nothing against him. And then there's the person that Mayor Ganey has already endorsed. And that is Sarah Inamorato. Trying to get that name right. And she, of course, is much more progressive than these other two. And I am really, really, I have no idea exactly what she's bringing to the table. But it could well be that she'd be, if you want to shake things up, if you want to freak out, it's like, you know, electing Sophie Maslow mayor. If you want to freak the old boys out, and I sure would like to, then I'll just elect a young, progressive woman, okay? She's already done a fine job. She's a hard worker, and you know, at the state house. And I don't know. That's the one I'd go for. And then there's a bunch of others. There's like a million others. Now, here's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that the vote for the white guys, the white guy vote, and for the name recognition vote, so Lamb and Weinstein and all those guys, they split the vote all up. Which could give Sarah Inamorato the inside track and let her get by. It'd be interesting. We need to shake things up around here, guys. Enough. Enough with the old. Enough with, Fitzgerald's gone. Another guy that I know and I, on a personal level, fine. But no. Let's shake it up. And I don't hear anything about any of it. We need to, this level of governance is where Democrats just fall asleep at the switch. It's the most important level, the one that impacts us more than any national level contest does. So I'm just saying, okay? Hang on. I came upon this story in the Times yesterday. Maybe some of you have read it too. Or maybe it's the kind of thing where you thought, I ain't reading a story about bees in Austria. But I did. I read the story about bees in Austria, and it was, I thought, rather fascinating. We know that bees, honeybees we're talking about, honeybees are in danger. They are dying at alarming levels, mostly because of us. Yes, mostly because of us. And so destroying bees is insane. I mean, to willfully destroy bees. And this story starts with a beekeeper in Austria who's told by the people who, I guess, ride herd on beekeepers from the government that his hive had to be destroyed. These are tens of thousands of bees were to be destroyed. And you know why? Because they were the wrong color. I kid you not. They were too dark. I kid you not. So the bee inspector for the Austrian state of Carinthia told this young beekeeper his bees were too dark. And the beekeeper refused. He said, are you nuts? And he went on further and said, it's racial fanaticism. We're talking about bees. Even the bees, the dark bees are at risk. And the fact that this is where the Nazis used to be was not lost on some folk. The fact of the matter is under Hitler, there was a head beekeeper in Germany, and his name was Gottfried Goetz. And he championed this one bee species, the Carniolan honeybee. And he wanted to keep those bees pure. He didn't want to mix them with any other bees. And he was a fanatic about it. So he was so obsessed with keeping his honeybees in the German honeybees. I never heard of such a thing. Genetically pure, the bees themselves don't give a damn what color the other bee is. But he kept trying to control the reproduction. And all the beekeepers in Nazi Germany were told they had to bring their queen bees to specific mating stations where pedigreed bees of the proper color were then to impregnate the queen. But what are these idiots thinking? Bees, you know, the way beehives work, I mean, bees leave the hive, do they not? Bees fly. Bees fly over fences and over boundaries and borders. And they see, this is insane. The fear was is diluting the purity of this specific bee, their carniolan bee. And by the way, that's the same bee. That's the same reason this poor guy in Austria, his bees were darker than the carniolan, whatever. They're still at it, trying to keep the bees from breeding with other bees. And they keep saying because they're afraid it'll make the bees more aggressive. Well, this is insanity. I mean, the guy is right. This is insanity. As far as I can tell, it's inbreeding that creates trouble. It's racial purity stuff, whether it's on bees or on humans, that creates trouble. Interbreeding creates not aggressive species, but I think smarter, healthier species. I mean, I have no doubt that if the bees are allowed to be with who they want to be with, that the queen's wanting whoever is the right way to go. I trust the queen bee to make these choices and not some fanatical lunatic thinking about purity. It's the way I think about dog purity. I mean, like the AKC kennel crapola. I mean, anytime humans get involved in telling animals, I think they just do damage. And you look at the breeds now, these breeds are sick. I think they're nuts. I think this purity in dogs is insanity. And it's known that the best dogs are mutts. They live longer. They're smarter. They're everything. Breeds, it's like interbreeding. How come can't we make fun about people interbreeding and the results of that? And yet this idea of purity in a bee. Oh, anyway, let me tell you, there's heavy duty fines for people whose bees are too dark. And there's a new law, and actually, this isn't the only country. I believe, what other countries are doing the same kind of thing all around there. They've got this idea in their heads that their bees need to be kept exactly the same and shouldn't mix with bees from outside of the hood. Yeah? So under a new law in Austria, if there is an imminent danger of mixed mating, for example, you've got two beekeepers in the same neighborhood and they've got not the exact kind of hives, the bee authorities can immediately seize and eradicate the entire colony at a time with bees who we need are dying all by themselves. Well, not all by themselves, because of us for other reasons. So anyway, just wanted to say, if you missed the bee story, you probably were happier than me. It's mind-boggling. humans. Mind-boggling. All right, that's it. That's more than it. And I thank you. I might watch a little of the... Don't bother, unless you're a glutton for punishment. I'm just saying. The State of the Union. A snoozer, if there ever was one. All right. Toodaloo.
Lynn Cullen Live, Monday through Thursday from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. and archived at pghcitypaper.com. The opinions expressed on Lynn Cullen Live are those of the host and do not necessarily reflect the viewpoints of Pittsburgh City Paper or its advertisers.